Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. August 11th, and we've got the first weekend of the NFL season behind us, and we'll talk about that a little later. In the 12 o'clock hour, we have Guy Williams, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. He's the president there. He joins us every Monday in the 12 o'clock hour. We talk about a lot of different things. We'll start out talking about what's happening in the U.S. labor market. We'll talk about the divergence between the U.S. central bank rates and the rest of the world. You'll be surprised what's going on there. Fake jury duty fines is running around as well. And we'll also talk about how the New York economy actually affects elections and the National Party, as well as some other issues. There's been a decision, or maybe not, we're not sure just yet, but a number of Republicans have been asking the Trump administration to engage the FBI to go out and find those missing Democrats that are running around the country that are not willing to step into the chamber of the state legislature in Texas in order to proceed in a special session. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, a lot of the folks living in Texas are not going to be the beneficiaries of funding and other stuff that's going on, especially those flood victims, because they're trying to avoid redistricting. And does the FBI have a role here? I suspect not. We'll find out from some experts what they believe. Mike Haas joins us at 11 o'clock, voice of the New Orleans Saints. We'll get a recap of the Saints-Chargers game, 27-13. Saints go down. Not a big deal in the preseason. But what were the positives? What were the negatives? Did the positives outweigh the negatives? And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the significant amount of competition that's going on at the quarterback position and some other positions as well, and maybe we'll get an update on some of the injuries. I wanted to start out this morning because it's really been a top of the news issue for several days now about the affordability in living in the city of New Orleans and the challenges thereof. And affordability is something that folks look at, not only, you know, the checks that they're writing out of their checking account and the revenue that they have coming in as it relates to their income, but people kind of look at affordability in a number of different ways as to what they're getting for the taxes that they're paying and things of that nature and the fees that they are paying to support city government, and whether or not there's a return, and whether or not the quality of life is there, whether or not the ease of administration of your life is there, because a lot of times people are willing to pay more, right? They're willing to pay more for some of the comforts of life if they're there. If government makes it easy, they're not as worried or not as tied up in angst and anxiety over certain things because they feel like they're getting something for their money, right? And that's where we seem to drop the ball a lot. I've been watching closely what these candidates are talking about. And I got to be honest with you, folks. They're not saying much. They're not saying much at all. We are engaged right now, and maybe a lot of folks are playing it close to the vest and are not going to reveal it until after Labor Day. And, you know, they're trying to shorten this race up. They don't want to put too much out there too early to get beat up on or mimicked or, you know, or whatever. I don't know. It's been a while since I ran a campaign, so I'm not sure, but pay close attention. There's not much being said. We're talking in generalities. We got all the sound bites down, but there's not a lot of specifics. And I get a little nervous when I see this. Again, the caveat is it's still early onset. And what's really interesting to me is we're talking about a lot of things on the expense side, which is very important. I mean, just this past week, I thought it was a major revelation. Wasn't a lot really reported on it. But consider the following just as a reminder. In 2025, we're facing a $34 million deficit in trash collection alone. The amount of money that comes in fees on your water bill for trash collection, minus the amount of what it's costing us to pick it up, we're $34 million down. In 2024, I think we were in the 20-something million dollar deficit, double digits for sure. 23 was just a few million dollars less than what we experienced in 24. There was a deficit in 2022 as well, approaching, I think, double digits. And in 2021, there was a $1 million deficit. Altogether, somewhere around 70-some-odd million dollars just in trash collection services alone. Now, I don't know how we allow this to go for this period of time without somebody somewhere, somehow, you know, blowing horns, whistles, concerns that this has run amok and that we're hitting the general fund and our fund balance in order to make up the differences here, which provides less money for something else. Now, I'll start with this for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, we have a revenue problem. Either we're not charging enough in fees, or we're spending too much for trash collection, or a combination of both. And all I do know is that we're collecting only one day a week now as opposed to 2 days a week, which is how it used to be. So something in this category is completely and totally run amok. But I said that nasty word revenue. And it may be that we need to talk more about that. Are we collecting what we're actually owed? Right? And there's kind of three major buckets. There's fees, there's sales taxes, and there's property taxes. And the amount of property taxes that are going to be paid are determined by an independently elected individual, the assessor. The assessor assesses the value of your home, and depending on the millage rate, you back into a number of what you actually owe in property taxes. Sales taxes, there's a portion of the total sales tax owed that goes to the state of Louisiana, and the remainder of that number goes to the city of New Orleans. It's collected on an honor system. Let me say that again. It's collected on an honor system that our businesses in the city are actually accounting for each one of their transactions, collecting a sales tax and remitting that sales tax to the city. Fees are tacked on to bills that you otherwise pay. So like your sewer fee, your garbage pickup fee, there may be a fee for mosquito spraying. There may be fees for other things you're typically going to see on your water bill, right? So if you had to pick somewhere to start to look at revenue that could be abused, where would you go? Well, you're right. You'd go to sales taxes. It's based on an honor system. And in the last year, last 8 years, I've not heard not a single peep about the city involving itself in conducting a significant number of sales tax audits out there, the results the same, or sales tax reports and projections about where we're going to be or not. And what's interesting about this is that we have, as my one of my good friends says about a tourist economy, is you got new wallets coming into your city each and every day. And they have a spend that they're going to make. And if you've got really proactive sales tax collection, you're going to collect quite a bit of money. But we wouldn't even know, right? We wouldn't even know how much of this is actually hitting cash registers and how much of it is actually being reported. I've asked several council members as to whether or not they get a monthly report on sales tax collections, and what I've been told is no. That is a major, major component of how you finance government. And when you have as many new wallets as we have coming into this city spending money, we should be all over this sector of the budget, the revenue numbers relative to sales taxes. And we should be making sure that as a fiduciary, each individual business is actually collecting the tax and remitting the tax to the city of New Orleans. I know for a fact that they're not. There's a lot of times that I'll pay cash at a cash register just to observe, to see what's happening. And the moment in time that they hit the sale button to just open the drawer and it registers a zero sale and they put cash in the drawer and give you change out of the drawer, and you can look as well, you know that they are not remitting the sales tax. They'll collect it, but they're not remitting it. Any time that they start figuring out on a piece of paper how much you are owed, or they have a calculator on the side of the cash register and they're figuring out the percentage of the tax that you owe and they put it in the cash drawer, you know that they're collecting it, but they're not remitting it. And these are the types of businesses that it's really easy to figure out. You send your auditors out a couple days in a row. You start making some cash transactions. You look at human behavior, pretty predictable in how they do this. And if they start just dropping cash into the cash register, they're not remitting. Now, for the dishonest business owner that's out there that's not doing that, it's a real boon for them, right? Because they get an additional 10 and some change percentage profit, typically over a transaction that may yield anywhere from 3 to 6 to 7% profit. So now we're at the 17% profit range. As they say in the ninth, that's more better. And if you start repeating this over and over and over again with a multitude of businesses that are out there, you can walk down Bourbon Street and see a number of businesses that have signed that says cash only. Well, those would be the first businesses that I would start to conduct sales tax audits on. Bars. A lot of cash transactions there. Be the second. I would have a sales tax auditor for every street in the French Quarter that runs from Canal Street to Esplanade Avenue and put one on every street. And we're going to get an interesting collection of data and whether or not these individuals are actually collecting and submitting sales tax to the city of New Orleans. Now, why is this important? We may otherwise have a city that has an adequate budget for it if we do a couple of other things parallel to this. One of the other things that we've not heard a single candidate talk about, not unlike revenue, they hadn't talked about it. I don't think they understand how to talk about it, quite frankly, because they're afraid that that's going to be totally equated to taxes, but it's not, is right-sizing city government. We actually have too many employees. When we compare ourselves to cities of similar sizes, we can look at the data and find out that we are way out of the norm. This organization has to be right-sized. Been there, done that. In the financial disaster in the early 2000s, not unlike a lot of other jurisdictions, we didn't know how long that incident, that happenstance, was going to have a significant financial impact on government. So we began to right-size the organization. We had over 1,700 employees at the time. We began to look at works in process. We began to look at where we were heavy or not. We looked at and studied overtime spend, which is something else that needs to be done in the city, to figure out where we could have some savings. We reduced the size of the JPSO from that number to about 1490, which is where it hovers today, right around that same number. And it's been there ever since. And I was very fortunate that I had a lot of good people working for me that were willing to sit down, make the difficult decisions. They weren't anybody's friends, and we did it by attrition. We didn't have to have a riff or otherwise. But it was a healthy activity relative to the organization. Have we heard one single mayoral candidate talk about this? Of course not. Because these are the tough things. Because this is how this is going to be characterized. That there's going to be some people in city government that may lose their job. These are the trade-offs of tax increases, fee increases, or otherwise, because the city government is too big. It's too big in some areas, and they don't have enough people in other areas. There needs to be operational audits done of this organization to gain a better understanding as to where we actually are, a snapshot of the organization, and how we go about right-sizing this place. I go back to this conversation that was had many, many years ago about whether or not there should be 8 police districts in the NOPD. We actually cover more land, we have more people, that's not a fair comparison because that includes the cities. But around the same size, give or take 15, 16,000 people. We have 4 districts. They have 8. You're burdened with a lot of rank structure in an organization. You don't need it. You can handle the span of control in a much different way. But what everybody would say, well, you know, there's historic significance to having a district in this neighborhood. Really? Well, ask them if they had a choice of maintaining the tax load or burden where it is right now or possibly going up in order to maintain and keep all of these districts. Let's find out how concerned they are about historically whether or not they stay within a territorial boundary of a district. I doubt very seriously they will. But these are all the things that need to be talked about in the determination of whether or not it's worth it to be here. Those those other things that I talked about, that are, do they feel like they're getting the efficiencies or not? I hope someone starts asking questions of these folks along this regard, because the curiosity has been killing me for years as to whether or not we're actually adequately financed and whether or not we are actually right-sized. And now, right now, more than ever, we're at that defining moment where people are making decisions as to whether or not it's worth staying in this city for the number that it's costing us, a lot of which is not the city's fault. The cost of homeowners and the fact that we're geographically located where we are, and the risks that are there relative to hurricanes and the like, it's not the city's fault. But it's something that local government needs to be cognizant of. It's something that local government needs to think about. It's something that local government's going to have to make a spend in preparation and things of that nature. And it begs of efficiency in all other areas so that people really believe that there's a positive value proposition to living here in the place that we call home. That has so much to offer. I would love to hear from you. We have the next segment open. Give us a call, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk In text line.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Let's go to the talk lines. Irvin, you're up. What say you?
Hey, happy Monday morning. I would like the city, the people of the city, because it's going to have to be grassroots, to consider a form of government called city manager. Now, it's working in Phoenix, Dallas, San Antonio, Charlotte, Santa Clara. Basically, you take the mayor's election out of it. The city is still, city council is still elected by the people. They vet and approve a city manager, which is a business type person. An example would be Sidney Torres. This person does not have to worry about reelection, doesn't have to worry about returning favors for votes or any political machine. His job or her job is based on performance. And you know, the city council reviews that performance. And the problem, folks, in New Orleans is we got a political machine, machines that are entrenched. And this would have to be a grassroots movement to try to change the city charter so that we could have a city manager and actually have a person in charge that's not worried about political dues, political favors, or reelection. They would work solely on the betterment of the city. I'll give it to you.
I've seen the city manager model, as you pointed out, for a long time, actually. It's not something new. It's been around quite a while. It's been very, very successful in some jurisdictions. It's all about attitude. It's all about mindset changing. I agree with you. You know, it's about a change in culture, quite frankly. And it's really all about efficiency. The other thing that it brings to the table are people that are really qualified in running a business, understand business principles, understand a lot of the functionalities of a business. Government is a business. It's just, you know, the structure is a little bit different. Your reporting, financial reporting is a little bit different from government accounting as opposed to financial accounting. There are very few little nuances that are different, but it's a business. It's all about running a business. And, you know, part of the problem is that we have a collection of individuals that come in with every new administration, many of which don't have much institutional knowledge about the entity that they're going to be running, coupled with not a lot of experience set in running a business the size of the city. And we've seen this over and over and over again. And when we talk about trying to assemble a team to be able to fill these positions necessary to run an organization like that, in a lot of cases, we don't even really know what we're doing there. We saw what went on with Mayor LaToya Cantrell and some of the choices that she made. It was like a revolving door, and people coming in and were overreaching on their authority, underreaching and not doing much, if even showing up for work, as simple as that, and no accountability. And for every month or 2 months or 3 months that there was a disruption, it takes a year to recover. In a city organization, government that has weak internal controls already and doesn't really know what the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, and vice versa. And so what happens? Nothing. We know what that's like. We've had 8 years of that. There have been some successes, in all fairness to her, but the negatives far outweigh any of the positives. Irving, will it happen here in the city of New Orleans? It's been discussed and shut down pretty much every time it's ever been discussed. And, you know, for a whole host of reasons, politics being one, you know, and everybody kind of out for themselves and not really thinking of the entity and how we can actually improve it. I don't know, Irving, if you have anything to add.
Well, no. New insanity is what? Doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah, sure.
And expecting change.
Absolutely. It's just going to be interesting. I mean, I don't know what your feelings are about what I was talking about. You know, we're talking about economic development, but we really don't have a good grasp of our revenue base. We don't have a clear understanding as to whether or not we're collecting all of our revenue. Imagine running a business and you have, you know, a lot of sales, man. You got inventory flying off the racks, but it's not reflected in your financials. So what would be the first thing that you would do as the business owner, right? You go figure out what the hell's going on. And that's never the case here. There's no exigency here. Why? Because it's unpopular. You're going to have to call people to task. And people don't, you know, the constituents that are running business, they don't like to be called to task, but it's a necessary evil. You got to make sure that you're getting what you're entitled to get, because you have the demands of the public that want services, but they don't want to pay any more fees and they don't want to pay any more taxes. So you got to make sure that you have a collection rate that's alive, well, and healthy. And, you know, whenever you have an honor system on a collection of a tax, that's where you have to be the most proactive each and every day of every business cycle to make sure you're getting what you are due. And, you know, it doesn't mean that people are crooks. A lot of times, they don't even recognize that a transaction that they're engaged in is actually a taxable transaction. So there's a whole host of different things. But it's part of educating your business community. It's part of understanding your business community. It's part of getting to know your business community, getting to know the business cycles, the types of transactions that they're involved in, and looking historically as to anomalies, deviations, or otherwise that beg of an audit. And then you go audit them. And you will be amazed at what you will find. And, you know, when the word spreads fast in the business community when people have to start writing checks because they've collected a tax and they've not remitted it. And, you know, the whole area, the whole sector of that type of business gets nervous, and they should. Because in a lot of cases, not all, but in a lot of cases, they know exactly what they're doing. Thank you for the call, Irvin. Let's go to Steve. Steve, you're up. What say you?
Oh, good morning, Sheriff. How are you doing?
Doing well. How about you?
I can't complain. God gave me another day. Woke up, eyes open, I breathed. Good day. day when you're 7 years old. Every day is a good day. Yes, I moved here from Houston a few years ago. I am an attorney in Texas, not licensed here. Didn't want to become licensed here for many reasons that we have a chance to meet, I'll tell you. But what I'm going to talk about is following up on what you said about overstaffing. Okay. Harris County Criminal District Court has 29 judges, criminal district judges, felony court judges. That's for a county with a population of 4.5 million, plus probably 200,000 to 300,000 illegal aliens. Orleans Parish has 12 criminal court judges for a county, well, a parish, of approximately 370 million. I'm sorry, 370,000. Boy, I got the whole country.
Right.
If you do the math, that means if Harris County had the same number of judges per capita as Orleans Parish, they'd have close to 300. There are far too many criminal district judges in Orleans Parish. And you'll see what I mean if you go down to the courthouse, and I have. You see judges working three-hour days, taking days off. There's not enough work for 12 full-time criminal court judges in Orleans Parish. But will anything ever be done to cut back on that? It should actually probably be about around 7 or 8 of them. No, because each one of those judgeships is a very, very important thing to a certain community in Orleans Parish. So that they will never be cut. But there are way too many judges. And each one of those judges, you know, costs quite a bit of money because they have staffers, assistants, whatever. The judges make, I think, around 170, 180, something like that, I believe. Well, they have court coordinators, they have clerks, they have paperwork people. I would imagine each court could probably cost close to $500,000 to $1 million, if not more. We don't need 12 criminal district courts in Orleans Parish. Same is true on the civil district court. And I might add, why does Orleans Parish have 5 juvenile court judges? Harris County has 3, despite having 14 times more people. Someone explain that to me. Well, it's called Feather Bay. And by the way,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. On a very related topic, because I think this is what's underlying all this, the whole IV waste, the other, you know, the whole trash pickup thing. No one wants to say what this is really about. And it's about one four-letter word, race. Well, Latoya Cantrell has shown over her administration that she will do anything to not hire members of a certain ethnic group. You look at all her appointments, with one exception, the current police chief, for all the high-level appointments, only one, the police chief, is a white person. She hasn't appointed any white people to anything. Troy Henry is a black gentleman. Finn Torres is a white gentleman. It's all about race. Latoya wants to get rid of the white guy or replace him with a black guy, and the qualifications do not matter.
Well, Steve, I'm going to disagree with you there because I know a lot of other folks that were actually appointed not only early onset in her administration but throughout the years that were white. So there's far more than one. Population is one way of looking at this. Whether or not we had the appropriate number of judges or not, my suspicion is we could do with less. It all depends on the number of filings that you have and your offender rate and relative to your population. New Orleans historically has had more than the national average as it relates to the offender rate here when crime was running crazy. Now, let me also say this, because you brought the race thing into this. The number of judges actually goes back a long, long time, where probably in this city we were very close to an equal breakdown of black and white. The number of judges were not created by the black community. And I can say that with a high level of confidence. So it's about everybody, you know, wanting a piece of the action at some point in time and how they got to that. we really, not unlike what I was talking about with the city, with operational audits, those should be done to the court systems as well. The Supreme Court should be very active in doing that in order to determine whether or not we have too many or too little or whatever it may be. These are elected positions. The problem, once you make them an elected positions, it is hard to get rid of them. And it's the same thing in the federal court system in the appointment world. It's hard to get rid of positions. Everybody fights for these positions that are there. And there's no doubt that in some jurisdictions in the federal system, they have way too many judges, because you can look at the court filings and see that they're some, in some jurisdictions, half of what they were 20 years ago. And, you know, you have to scratch your head and wonder why you have as many judges as you have. But thank you for the call, Steve. We'll be right back.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Let's go back to the talk lines. Rich, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Noel, thanks for taking my call. I think your previous caller a couple of calls ago was dead on, man. This city needs a city manager, or it needs a strong mayor that's a taskmaster, that knows how to lead. You know, same thing with your the attorney who just called. I've been in New Orleans for 11 years, and man, it's so stark and flashing, a flashing red light in my mind, you know, the weaknesses of the city. And it's a lack of accountability, a lack of oversight. It's not hard, but nobody gets held accountable in this city when it comes to the city government. Code enforcement, you know, Hard Rock implodes in the middle of a city. Think about that. Tell me another American city where something like that has happened in the last 100 years. Who got fired? Who got held accountable? You know, Public Works has dwindled to 10 people, you know, thousands of streetlights out, and nobody seems to be have a sense of urgency about it. Sewage and Water Board dysfunction. You know, we have a flood, and it's, the answer is, oh, we had a glitch, or the pump operator fell asleep. Like, you can't make that kind of stuff up, man. The school board can't do basic accounting. We have, you know, our leading mayoral candidate, you know, her commercials, she says the biggest problems here is government coordination. Like, oh my God, you cannot be serious. It's not government coordination. It's accountability, and it's having a leader in the mayor's office. That is the problem.
No, I don't disagree, Rich. And this isn't something that was only unique to the Cantrell administration. We've had failures for the last three administrations for certain. Anytime you're still spending Katrina dollars, 20 years later, this wasn't only the LaToya Cantrell administration. I mean, this goes back failure after failure after failure. I just simply do not understand the fact that public works people are still working out of FEMA trailers. How do you recruit anybody to, oh, this is where you work? What? No, thank you. I mean, you know, the aesthetics of where you're working and the surroundings and everything are every bit as important as salary or otherwise for people today. And we just seem not to be able to get it. But you're right. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.